Okay, it looks like we're back.
Blog
We're
Talk Radio.
Shauna, I apologize for that delay. Are you here? Are you with us? Can you hear me okay? Okay, I am just having some issues here. I think we need to possibly have you called back in. not sure what's going on right now. I do apologize. Of course, expecting the show to go off without a hitch was, you know, dreamer and dreamland stuff. So, yeah, fun times. Apologies for that. So, folks, bear with us for just a couple of seconds here as we have Shauna call back in. I hope that it's not going to make her wait. As if I'm a caller in the queue. What? Okay, so it's giving me a hold time for you, Shauna. Are you there? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. You're there. Okay.
I called back in, so maybe my other connection didn't work out, but that happens. It's wonders of podcasting.
Exactly. The wonders of podcasting is right. So we're going on two different platforms here, Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker.com. So if you want to tell everybody who's listening a little bit about yourself before we begin, that would be awesome.
Sure, happy to. So my name is Shauna Ora Knight, and I am an author. I'm an artist. I'm also I teach workshops, and primarily my focus is in teaching leadership and community building and facilitation techniques within the pagan community. but one of my areas of focus, it's actually kind of an accidental area of focus, but one that I think is very much needed, is, and partially it grew out of my work teaching pagan leadership, but one of the things that I focus community, I'm a survivor of a couple of different types of abusive relationships. There's, I had a specifically abusive relationship, romantic relationship, but I also experienced, extreme bullying as a kid and a number of other things and stuff that I'm sure a lot of folks listening can resonate with as far as things that they have gone through in life and things that shape us. And because I have been through this and because I see these dynamics in our communities, because there isn't one pagan community, there's, the pagan community is a subculture. It's lots of different overlapping communities. And we have these. Any subculture has difficulty with these sorts of dynamics for reasons we can get into if that's relevant. But we have a tendency to not speak out about this stuff. And abuse stuff like this happens in our daily lives as well. And so for me, a lot of my work is trying to educate people about abuse, both for people who are victims of abuse and dealing with that, or for people who are seeing those abusive dynamics from outside, and working to help get people the tools they need to get out of those dynamics, to heal from those dynamics, to work with those dynamics in our communities when they happen, and see if we can help make less of that happen. And so it's, it all ties into the leadership and the communication work. It's also, there's a lot of personal growth work within there, but my work is very much about helping people become their best selves through whatever their spiritual path happens to be.
Same here. And I really like the way that you illustrated that point. I like the words you used, the descriptors you used to tell us about what you do, because that's exactly what I tell my clients, that as a lifestyle consultant and a psychotherapist, I am here to help you become your best self. I really like what you just said on that. It's very interesting phraseology that we've got the exact same sort of tagline there. I love that. So if you're comfortable with it, can you tell us just give us a brief overview of, what sorts of abuse you've experienced personally? I'm not saying ins and outs details, paint us a picture, but
sure.
Personal, was it within the pagan community? Was it romantic? Was it personal? And can you let us know what your experience has been with folks who, you know, along the lines of the topic we're discussing today, who had a problem choosing between you and the abuser.
Well, and you know, I'll as much as I can within the pagan community, just because that adds this extra layer of it, because, yes, you know, in the pagan community, it's often, it's not 6 degrees of separation, it's like three, you know.
Very.
I mean, yeah, it's, I mean, and that becomes one of the difficulties, is if you and your abuser are both within your local pagan community, or even, you know, kind of a broader community, it becomes really difficult, because then you have to face, like, okay, we have mutual, all of our friends are mutual friends, and all of my potential social outlets are, you know, that person might be there. So it does add some significant complexity. So I've had a number, I've started looking at abuse as a spectrum, to be honest, because I think we tend to divide ourselves into this binary of I was abused, I was not abused. And I think our culture is just very abusive, and I think a lot of people don't realize that they are having some of the same, basically, you know, the symptoms of being a victim of abuse. They don't recognize it, because it, you know, it's just endemic in our culture. Our culture is a very shaming culture. You know, there's billboards telling you what you're supposed to eat and what you're not supposed to eat, and that you're supposed to be thin, and you're supposed to be this, and you're supposed to have a new car because otherwise people will hate. I mean, it's a very pressuring, abusive kind of a society we live in. And then you go to, you know, what is your family, you know, is your family pressuring you? Is your, you know, is there a family dynamic? And, you know, my family dynamic, I wouldn't say was really incredibly abusive. It wasn't always the healthiest. Like, there's definitely some stuff that, you know, I'm starting to go into with my family where I realized there was stuff that wasn't the healthiest emotional dynamic, but, you know, it wasn't like, you know, a really overtly abusive, I guess is the best way I can put it. You know, but my mom was my safe haven, because I was bullied really terribly at school, because I was the fat kid with acne, and I was the smart kid, and, you know, I was bullied pretty badly. Particularly, like, in grade school, it was a little easier, because it was actual, more just overt physical bullying sometimes, and you know, I was mostly just rejected. Middle school, you know, I don't know what it is about those little hormones boiling up inside of everybody's bodies, but everybody in middle school was just way more asshole, and it was a lot more psychological abuse, is the best way I can put it. You know, just the energy it takes to go to school every day when you know that there are going to be people there hating you and calling you names and bothering you when you're trying to go to the bathroom, and, you know, it's a lot. And so that's kind of, you know, what I went into adulthood with, is feeling like everybody was out to get me, and you know, and I had ample evidence of that, so I wasn't necessarily wrong. And I went through a lot of personal growth work at Diana's Grove, and I was feeling a lot better about myself. I wasn't kind of being as standoffish. I was pre-rejecting myself. I'd kind of developed this tough girl, know-it-all, fuck everybody kind of an attitude. And so I kind of eased off on that, and I opened up, and then I started a relationship with a man who, he's pagan and he's bipolar. I later learned he's on disability because of his bipolar being as severe as it.
Wow.
Well, here's where abuse becomes problematic, because there are things that he told me about his life, and when you're working with somebody who is abusive in specific ways, there's no way to tell if he was telling the truth or not. But I'll tell you kind of what he told me about his life, and certainly there are some grains of truth in here. You know, he told me that his stepdad was really abusive, and his stepdad kept on trying to kick him out of the house as a kid, and his stepdad set it up so that he got carted away into a mental institution when he was like 15 or 16, and, you know, he wasn't able to finish high school, and he got his GED, but then he basically was in and out of mental hospitals and group homes. So I met him when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and he was in his early 30s. He had not really lived on his own, as I later learned. He, you know, he'd kind of grown up in, you know, hospitals and group homes. So
you were his first experience with that. You were, yeah. Okay.
He just didn't have, basic life skills. And, and the thing is it started out, and it says it so often does, he was a sweet guy, and I knew he was kind of damaged, but we seemed to be good for each other. And in certain aspects, we were. We absolutely were. And this particular relationship is not the one that I refer to as my, my really abusive ex, because this was over the course of about 2 years, and he started to lose stability, and the mood swings got worse. He wasn't on any medication for the bipolar. He wasn't doing any therapy, and the mood swings were getting more and more severe. And then probably the last, 6 months of our relationship, he was doing a lot of back and forth. He wanted to break up. No, he wanted to get back together, and he emotionally, in hindsight, what I really can only call is he would turn into a 12-year-old. He just didn't have a handle on, he would become very childish is the only way I can really put it. And so that was an emotional strain on me because, there got to be a point where we were supposed to renew our lease together, and I didn't know where I was going to be living next week, basically. That is abusive when you are manipulated by somebody else's emotions to that degree. That is abusive.
Yes, it is.
So, I went through some time after that relationship, that basically after that relationship ended. Well, so he like I said, he was pagan. Here's how the impact worked as far as pagan stuff goes, is he was coming to Diana's Grove with me, and he had volunteered to help with some stuff, and then he kind of bailed on that, so that had an impact on me at Diana's Grove. And then he was also part of our local leadership of our group in St. Louis, and one of the times that he broke up with me, it was in February, so it was right around Valentine's Day.
Ooh.
And I have terrible luck with Valentine's Day. I just don't even celebrate it anymore. But
same here. I'm with you there.
Yeah. So he bailed on, making a long story short, our group in St. Louis had planned a day-long pagan conference, and then we had a freak ice storm the day before, and it was unsafe for our presenters to come to town. So we had to cancel, and we were $2,000 in the hole.
Oh, it was bad.
So what we did is the venue we had rented, they were under no financial obligation to do this, but what they did is they said, okay, if you want to reschedule your date and use the facility again, we'll make that work for you because this was a freak act of weather thing, and which is very nice. So what we did is about 6 weeks later, we held kind of a benefit. So we did a public in-bulk ritual, and we gathered together lots of stuff for fundraising, and we raised pretty much the money we needed to cover our costs. So that was a very important day. And he was on a leadership team. He had ritual roles. He was helping me with setup. And that morning when I woke up to get us ready to go and do this benefit event, he broke up with me. So I was having to deal with that. And, that's emotional manipulation because
yes.
What he wanted
yes.
was for me to prioritize him in that moment. He was being a drama queen. He was having his meltdown. He wanted me to not go do the event and to instead stay with him and prioritize him. He was trying to leverage that.
And he was probably trying to ruin any sense of fun or accomplishment that you got from participating in the community in that way.
No, I don't. I not with him. I could say that with my other ex, but not with him. He was acting purely on emotional autopilot. I can say that he would turn into the scared little kid. He wanted to be the focus of my attention.
Okay.
What's that?
He went directly in the opposite direction, whereas many abusers would be trying to ruin it for you. He was just unable to control his emotions.
And I didn't even recognize what he was doing as abusive until, I started doing more therapy and looking at emotional abuse. I mean, he doesn't have good emotional coping skills. And so this was one of those things where, lots of us, and I know this is something that has been hard for me to wrap my head around, and I know it's hard for others, a lot of us have abusive behaviors that we learn, and it's because we learn these bad behaviors, and they're not helpful, they're not healthy, they hurt other people around us, but we learn them often just because we're scared.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
A lot of that comes from that. So this relationship was, you know, it was abusive in the sense that I was being emotionally jerked around and manipulated, but, you know, it wasn't, he wasn't a narcissist. He wasn't, you know, he just had no emotional filter, and eventually that just got to be too exhausting, you know, to be with. And then he left me for somebody else and didn't tell me, and, you know, so that was all that. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
But, I mean, no, it's, you know, he was trying to feel safe, and I get that. He doesn't have, and this is, you know, just such an important thing to understand about abuse, is the abuse is not always about the person being abused. Sometimes it's just that person doesn't understand how manipulative and hurtful they're being, and that kind of makes it hard, because on the one hand, those of us who, we have compassion for this person we love, and we know that they don't mean to treat us like that, but at the same time, it is still really impacting our lives. So, so you know, it was in the aftermath of that relationship where I was feeling very alone and very much in that, you know, I'm too difficult to put up with, who's going to love me, I'll be alone forever kind of a headspace, you know, which is, that's definitely one of my challenges. That's one of my dark places I go to. And in that place, I was in the middle of moving back to Chicago after finishing the leadership training at Diana's Grove. And I was like, okay, I want to do some community networking here, you know, get some public rituals going, you know, but first I was like, okay, let me see what's going on around. And there was already a group that was doing that in Chicago called Earth Spiritualists of Chicago. And, you know, their leader was a guy named Mark, and at the time he was going by the magical name Mulogo, and then later on, after he and I were together, he changed his name to Mark Mandrake. And so he and I met on, you know, I messaged him, and I messaged a few other community leaders, and he's one of the only people that actually responded, and I said, hey, you know, I just came back to Chicago after doing this leadership training, and I'm looking to find ways I can engage the local pagan community and help out. And, you know, I'm interested in offering classes and helping organize events, stuff like that. And I mean, if you're a pagan organizer and somebody is interested in volunteering and who has skills to bring to the table, you're going to snap that up. I mean, he and I met at a cafe to talk, and, we hit it off like a house on fire, and we were talking for, you know, I don't know, what, 6 hours, something like that. I was kind of getting, and I can be, I will fully admit, I can be totally clueless about this, but I was kind of getting the vibe that he was attracted to me. He had said he was married. So I was like, you know, I don't really want to get involved in a poly thing right now.
Of course.
And, it didn't occur to me that, you know, he would be cheating.
You bring up an important point right there, and that is that those of us, not just those of us who have been through abuse, but people in general, you know, when we're good people and we're empathetic and kind and compassionate and caring people, we assess our own motivations and our own values on other people, and I think that's one lesson you can take away from meeting someone like that is, don't do that. Let them show you, you know, who they are and what they value. And I'm not saying that it's a bad thing for us to do that. It's just that sometimes it ends up not being so healthy in the long run. So I just take a moment and point out that little kind of lesson that you just brought up when you mentioned that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many factors that end up going into all of this that, you know, and it's often a hindsight being 2020 thing. Like there's stuff that I can explain having been through it that,
of course,
you know, if you would have explained it to me before this, I maybe could have noticed some of it, but it's just there's so many little subtle things that build up with this. So, you know, in hindsight, there were a lot of red flags going off, you know, if I knew more, if I'd known more at the time about, you know, cheating behavior and what that looks like. But so
we solved it. It's not your fault.
Oh, yeah.
Or anyone's fault in a situation at all.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what happened was we, you know, I, you know, kind of in my head, I was like, well, you know, I would be interested in somebody like him, but I don't want to get into a poly thing. So, you know, and when you're having a relationship with somebody you are in, you know, you're working with, even if it's a volunteering context, like in the pagan community, that makes things complicated. So I was like, yeah, that's, you know, that's not really a good idea. So, you know, I, then as he and I were talking more, he was more overtly flirting. And so I just directly said, I said, well, you know, I certainly would be interested in a different context. But, you know, A, you and I are working together. B, you're married. And, you know, I'm really not wanting to do the whole poly thing. And so then he goes into this whole sob story about how his wife is really abusive and how they're really only married in name only because she's pregnant.
Oh.
And here's the thing. He may be right about that, but that being said, is he was using it to manipulate me into a relationship with him. So he was basically, you know, playing it off as like, he's like, I live in a separate bedroom. You know, we're just together for the kids. And so under that context, I believed him. And, you know, we kind of started a relationship together. That didn't last very long before I discovered that she indeed did not know that he considered them, or that you know, he considered them broken up. She did not. And as soon as I found that out, I broke things off and I said, look, and then there was a sob story like, oh, she's so abusive. You know, I didn't want to, you know, really break things off formally just because, you know, she's just so horrible. Da, 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 you know, so he had a really great excuse for everything, and I admit I bought it. You know, I bought it. I am more discerning now.
Well, because you've been through it, right? I mean, if you hadn't been through it, you wouldn't feel that at all. You would still be myself too. I think we would still probably want to believe things like that about people, and but that's such a hallmark of, you know, we both know now. That's such a hallmark of who is trying to manipulate you. They're going to tell you, oh, our relationship's over. We're just roommates, basically. You know, we don't talk. We don't have sex. And it's like, okay, at this point, it's become a pretty rote story. And it's something so many abusers use. For anyone out there who's in a similar situation right now or hearing that story themselves.
Yeah, it's a pretty common story. And, you know, now I know that, but, you know, at the time I didn't. So, you know, we, you know, kind of fast forwarding a little bit through things, you know, he did break up with her. She took the kids and moved to her folks' place. And, you know, he and I were, for lack of better words, we became a pagan power couple where we were, you know, running an insane number of events in the Chicagoland pagan community. And, you know, we were, not immediately, but eventually he and I started co-teaching together. And, you know, I was teaching at various festivals, and I was just starting to get invites to teach at festivals as kind of a second, third tier presenter. there's rankings, so to speak. And, you know, and I would say, oh, you know, my partner can come with, and he teaches on topics of alchemy and blah, blah, blah. And so I kind of built his reputation as a festival teacher by inviting him along. And so, you know, but what happened after about a year is that he started cheating on me. And he basically what he was doing was telling people that we were poly when we were not. And for folks listening, if you're not familiar with the shorthand, poly meaning polyamorous or an ethically non-monogamous relationship. And, you know, I wasn't totally averse to the polyamory thing, like, in the long term, but, you know, right then we were still pretty new as a couple, and that, and I, you know, after him cheating, I was like, well, I really don't want to be poly until I can trust that you're not going to cheat on me for, you know, at least a year. And so, you know, I didn't end things with him. I, you know, I said, okay, you get some therapy for what you're going through, and, you know, I'll hold on. But the problem is that I already was dealing with some depression and anxiety stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, being cheated on, particularly when, you know, I have body image issues about, you know, am I attractive? And being cheated on does not help those body image issues. And, you know, depression is kind of a spiral into hell. And I got more and more depressed, and I wasn't interested in sex with him because I didn't feel safe. And his whole thing was, you know, he's like, well, if you would have more sex with me, then I wouldn't be interested in other people.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I, you know, I to, you know, there were some instances where I, at the time, I did not understand that it was rape.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you hear, you know, when you're learning about sexual assault, you know, you kind of imagine the whole being dragged behind a dumpster, like the, you know, with the kid, what is his name, Brock, whatever,
yeah.
what that
Brock
little
Turner.
Asshole did,
yeah.
you know, that's
yeah.
kind of the story of what people think is a quote unquote real rape. Well, lots of rape happens when, you know, your partner initiates sex, you say no, and they don't stop.
Yeah.
And in my case, it was a situation where it was like, well, okay, maybe he'll just get it over with, and then we can go. Actually, it was the very sad thing is that the you know, one of the specific instances happened before we were supposed to go run a Beltane event.
Oh my goodness.
And yeah. And so, you know, that's kind of always going to be there for me when I think about Beltane. And so, that being said, it, you know, it's, this happens to so many women, and they don't even realize that their consent is being violated. It happens to men too. It happens to people of all genders where they are pressured into sex and they don't feel that they can say no, or they say no and that no isn't respected. And I will 100% admit myself, you know, looking back at my relationship, past relationship with men, I learned, you know, the kind of growing up, I learned that, like, if a man is not interested in sex, you just keep, you know, bugging him or pressuring
yeah.
him or, you know, touching him, or, you know, you can, you know, oh, you know, come on, you know, you can pressure some, you know, you can pressure a guy, and that's socially okay, and it really isn't. It's also
not
a violation of consent.
It is.
So,
you're right.
You know, there are so many different things where, you know, learning more about consent and how my own consent was violated has helped me be a more respectful lover for my partners, because there are things that are kind of, like I said, they're in the movies, they're in TV shows. It's socially, you know, there's kind of this idea that it's socially acceptable, and it really isn't. So it's on all of us to really look at how we pressure other people to do things.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So the cycle of our relationship continued. You know, it got worse and worse, and then he started turning other people in our group against me, and, you know, I've blogged about it really at length, so I'm not going to go into the super details, but the, you know, there were a couple of specific things. There were two breakups. One was the final breakup in 2011, but the, you know, there were two breakups within there. And, you know, he very specifically turned our leadership team against me, and he and the woman he was cheating on me with, did that, you know, together. And, you know, later on, you know, we had lots and lots of mutual friends. And, you know, to bring it back to the topic, the core topic of, you know, what do you do when this is happening within your community and you and your abuser are in the pagan community together, or, you know, even just you have shared friends. And there were people, you know, when I spoke out about what he did, there were people who said I was lying. There were people who there were people who specifically chose him over me. They very overtly did that. And there were lots of people who were like, well, I'm not going to choose between you.
And can you just take a moment to address something you just said? I want people listening to be aware of this, because I hear a lot of people out there come to me and say things like, well, you know, so-and-so said that they were abused. They're lying. That person would never abuse their partner or what have you. I just want to point out that about 3-4% of all reported cases of ever are ever juvenile. So nothing much to be gained to by coming forward to law enforcement, to your community, to your group of friends and loved ones, and saying, I was if you were not abused. So I just want to point really quick, because it's so easy. A person's lying, they can't tell the truth. Odds are they are very much telling the truth.
And there are, the problem is that there are caveats to that, because my ex was actually, one of the ways he turned people against me is he convinced people that he was the one being abused.
Right,
so,
because
yeah.
He is,
so he was in that percentage good. Of people that's lying.
But. Yeah, well, and that's a whole other, you know, that goes ties to personality disorders and just abusive personality types, because, you know, what is the abuser, oftentimes they will claim to be the victim when they are a disordered person.
Yeah, and that's a situation. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that more likely to believe the first narrative they hear, and if they're the one to initiate that narrative and to claim to be the victim, that you know, people are going to be to change their mind.
Mm-hmm. That's actually, there's a technique that I use when I'm engaging in any kind of mediation or negotiation where there's, you know, two sides or multiple sides of a story, because I know my psychological instinct is going to be to believe the first story that I hear, and so.
Yeah.
I don't try and fight that. I just notice, okay, so this person is telling me their story, so I'm going to believe that because this is what's before me right now. And then when I hear the next story, my instinct is going to be to believe that story because that's what's before me. And I let myself, you know, feel that and notice that. And then, you know,
yeah.
I work to gather data and see where there's the inconsistencies. And, there's usually, you know, there's a quote from Babylon 5, which is one of my favorite sci-fi shows, that the quote is, the truth points to itself.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And very often, you know, if you listen enough, if you keep on asking questions and collecting information, if you talk to various parties, if you fact-check, and fact-checking is very important if you're trying to determine, you know, what's going on, if you do that, you will often find out what's going on, and it takes effort, and it's difficult to do because it's uncomfortable as hell. I will be right up front. Like, you have to ask people direct questions about things. You have to basically disbelieve that they're telling the truth. Like, your instinct is, like, it's your friend, so you want to believe them, right? But you have to assume that they may or may not be telling the truth, and but when you do that fact-checking, you can usually figure out what's going on. It does take significant effort. And because, you know, that's one of the things that I, like I said at the beginning of the show, like I kind of accidentally specialize in is dealing with abusive community leaders, because what happens is this exact scenario where you've got one person saying, you know, they're the victim, they're being abused, and then you've got somebody else saying, no, it's them that's the abuser. And you're like, well, what do you do here? And usually, if somebody, and like you were talking about with personality disorders and the particular abusive setup, is that somebody who is using the status of victim in order to gain sympathy, there are other abusive flags that go with that, and if you know what you're looking for, you can see it. I'm not going to say it's easy; it can take some time to figure it out. but it, you know, it's a whole constellation of things. And so that's kind of what was happening to me, is there were people that mostly it's there, you know, he had his kind of followers, you know, my ex, he had his followers, and they, you know, there were some of them that I tried talking to and convincing that I was, you know, convincing on my side of the story. And what I have learned is that if you're in one of those particular abusive scenarios where your partner or whoever is abusing you has turned people against you, do not spin your wheels. It is a lot of emotional effort to try and explain all that to somebody, and they are not probably going to believe you because they've already been poisoned against you. Now, here's the thing that can give you a little light of hope in that. And what happened over the course of several years is one by one, you know, a number of people who had very specifically sided with my ex would contact me. And they would say, I'm so sorry I said all those horrible things to you. I've finally seen Mark do the stuff that you said he did.
Right.
I'm so sorry. And so, you know, sometimes people do come back to you. And so what I, you know, when I'm dealing with an abusive situation where somebody's really convinced that the other party is the one, you know, so-and-so could never be abusive. It's, you know, what I will generally tell them is, you know, I hear where you're at, and that's not the truth of the situation. I'm not going to fight you on this. I'm just going to go ahead and cut you out of my life. But if you come to a place where you are seeing this person doing this behavior, and you start to understand that where I'm coming from, do feel free to contact me. But until that point, I'm going to cut you out.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah.
The help
and,
you
can do. Actually, a number of my exes, from after his and my relationship, you know, he was doing some of the same stuff to them, and they, you know, one in particular contacted me, and, you know, she was just desperate for help because she didn't know what was going on, and she's like, I just had a feeling that he must have done the same thing to you. And I was like, yep, he's done it to me, he did it to his ex-wife, he did it to, you know, he's a serial abuser, and I'm really sorry that happened to you, but, you know, her having someone to actually process that out with helped. And that's a lot of why I write about these topics, because it's so fucking common that, you know, these patterns are so very common. And it is really, really hurtful to be in that situation, particularly because abusers will cut off your support network.
Yeah, they will, on purpose.
And Mark absolutely worked to cut off my support network. And when you're feeling that alone, because, you know, abusers also are really good at honing in on your weaknesses, basically. That, you know, a lot of us don't want to think we have any weaknesses, but we do. We all do. And the abusers have this little satellite dish. They have this little parabolic dish that they can focus in on you and figure out how to manipulate you. And, you know, I remember just feeling totally lost and totally alone, and, you know, that I didn't have a support. I didn't have any help in that. And I didn't even know it was, I mean, I didn't even have the framing to understand that it was abuse at the time. Not really. You know,
right.
I didn't understand. I didn't have terms like gaslighting to know how I had been manipulated. I didn't, you know, I knew what was going on was wrong, but I didn't have the language for it. And, and then to hear from mutual friends that I thought maybe might be a support network, well, you know, I can't choose between you, you know, they were trying to do the thing where it's like, well, you know, arguments take it takes two to tango.
Mm-hmm.
And for situations of abuse, that is such a harmful thing to hear.
Yes, it is.
Because what your abuser often does, and certainly mine did, is they twist you around so that they blame you for the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the gaslighting package. And, you know, gaslighting, basically the easiest way I can explain gaslighting to folks not familiar with the term is, basically, it's I tell you a lie to make myself look better, and the lie is that it's actually your fault or that you are misinterpreting the situation or that you're confused or that you're not one remembering it. And most of the time when I see gaslighting, if I'm the one gaslighting somebody, I'm trying to, make you think you're the one that's crazy or that you're the one that has the problem, to kind of a smoke screen so that you don't realize that I'm the one who has the problem.
And the way I think a lot of abusers accomplish that is, this weird, this odd packaging of, their narrative. It's like they have a whole wrapper of bullshit that they kind of wrap around a tiny kernel of truth, and they'll try to serve it up to you in this really specific way so that you will believe it. And when you do, then that is absolutely devastating to, I think, your sense of self, your confidence, your identity, who you are as a person. And when you start believing that, then you're getting into the territory of like Stockholm syndrome and siding with your abuser first and foremost, rather than believing your own intuition. I think that is such a tough place to get out of, and you did get out of it. And so I guess I want to just take a moment and acknowledge that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's, I guess, when you had talked about wanting to, to talk about this on the podcast, one of the things that has just been really coming up for me is the connection between, for folks that are dealing with that aspect of the emotional abuse. Because even, if you're being sexually abused, if you're being physically abused or not, there's always an emotional abuse and always a manipulation component of it. And with gaslighting, it's, your sense of self has been very, it's been broken down, and you are being trained that it's your fault. And I held up pretty well, because I'm resistant to some of the, there are a few things that I was like, well, no, that's, I'm really, like he would try to, one of the gaslighting things that is pretty common is where somebody tells you, oh, you're remembering that wrong. I have a really freaky good memory. So that didn't work on me. But what did work on me was, those people don't really like you. That worked. He would just keep trying things until they worked. And so when someone is coming out about abuse, when someone is going to that mutual friend and talking about what's happened, and their friend says, well, I can't choose between you, or says even the worst thing, which is, it takes two to tango, and, you're just as responsible as your partner is for some of these conflicts. For an abuse victim, that is so very damaging to hear, because it takes them right back into that gaslighting.
Absolutely.
And I wish more people understood that ties into that. And you can actually really, there's a couple things happening there. One is if they're still on that cusp of, they haven't quite gotten out of the clutches of their abuser, you can actually be responsible in that moment for reinforcing what the abuser is doing and keeping them from getting the help that they need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think let me ask you this. What is your opinion that people adopt that narrative of, supporting what the abuser is doing? Do you feel that there's any component of conscious realization there, or that it's more just following along, going with the flow?
I think that's a situational thing. I mean, I would say most of the time it's done naively. Most people, and I get not wanting to choose between your friends. And I also get that abusers can be, for people outside of the abusive relationship, they can be incredibly charming. You want to think that, the abusive person is the creepy asshole all the time, and they're not. I mean, sometimes you can tell that somebody is just an abusive asshole. Sometimes you can just tell. But a lot of times they are incredibly charming. They're very manipulative in ways that you can't even imagine. And, you know, they're your good buddy, and they helped you when you moved last time, and they, you know, took care of your cat when you're out of town, and, you know, they, you have all these associations of these good things that they've done, and you don't want to believe that they could do something bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think a lot of times there's a couple things going on. One is, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of psychology stuff out there that people have access to, but they, you know, there's a lot of, you know, conflict resolution stuff that I think is, it's scenario conflict resolution, is
right.
The best way I can put it. Like mediation is a really good example. You know, I've been trying to get more people to engage in mediation in the pagan community when there's a conflict, because mediation can actually help resolve some of these conflicts that we have in our communities. The problem is, once people kind of go down the, oh, well, you know, we need to do a mediation kind of a rabbit hole, they think that that's going to, you know, that's always the answer. Well, here's the thing. If it's an abusive scenario, mediation is not at all appropriate, because the abuser can use mediation to get back inside their victim's head.
Yes. And because there are many abusers out there who are on the spectrum of personality disorders, sometimes they can try to co-opt the mediator and the audience. I mean, they're always playing to an audience, so they will try to co-opt everybody who's listening into believing their side of the story, and like you said, further damaging their victim.
Yes. And that I can attest to this both firsthand, in that because I engaged with a mediation with my partner, my ex-partner Mark. And that led to us getting back together for another year and change of abuse. So,
I'm so sorry.
And part of it was, you know, I that's a whole side tangent that's not as germane to the point. But I have seen it both firsthand with myself, and I have seen it with others. I have seen other abusers try and use mediation as a way to get at their victims. And, you know, I am pretty sure that I have heard that in kind of divorce proceeding things, that the if there is an abusive scenario, that mediation is actually not allowed by the court as a way to resolve it because of that particular scenario. So that's going back to your question of, like, are people intentionally doing that, and, you know, to support the abuser? And I think it's we learn this kind of, you know, conflict resolution is equal, you know, each party, you know, it takes two to tango kind of a thing. And for some conflicts, that's absolutely true. And for other conflicts, it's not. And one of the things as well, and this, you know, this also ties into the whole thing, that one of the things that makes it really difficult is there's this idea of the perfect victim, where, you know, if you're a victim, you're being abused, you're being bullied, you're being hit, and you never hit back, you never shout back, you know, you're this perfect, meek little victim. Well, that's not how life works. You're not a perfect, you know, some people are, they don't ever shout back, they just take it. Okay, great. That's one type of person. There are other people who shout back, who, you know, are pushed to the point because they are being, you know, they're enduring trauma. They are enduring trauma, and they are pushed to the point where they do hit back, or they do shout back, or they do say terrible things. And it can look from the outside like that is the person who's nut bar.
Because they've been,
so, you know, it's one of those things where if you are the person that someone is coming to, you know, and you have two friends, and they are in a relationship, and they are, you know, you have the one person coming to you. We'll just call them person A. You know, person A says person B has been abusing them, and you know, there's a number of things that are going to be going on in your mind in that moment, and you know, maybe your instinct is to believe them, and maybe your instinct is that your other friend couldn't possibly, and, you know, it's okay for that to be complicated in that moment. It's all right.
Of course.
But, you know, the the trick is to really try and look at what's going on and open your eyes when you're presented with that situation, because it's going to be messy and it's going to be complicated, and maybe this person that's coming to you is the abuser and they are trying to use you in a ploy to manipulate their primary victim.
Exactly.
Maybe that's what's going on, so that has to be a possibility in your mind. And maybe this is a victim who's coming to you for help and or at least just support. And when if you say, well, I can't choose between you, you are choosing their abuser, because by not making that choice, you are leaving them with the option of either engaging with their abuser via you or not engaging. And if they are at that point where they're ready to make the separation, that's, they have to have that boundary. So you are basically cutting them off from, the support of your friendship, your relationship. So, it gets really complicated really fast. And, I really am trying to figure out how to do some kind of a training, like a video training or something, on how do I determine, like, when somebody's coming to me, because, I hear a lot of conflicts and a lot of people talk to me about stuff, and, I'll have people come to me with, I'm being abused by, or the so-and-so is engaging in abusive behavior, and I have to try and determine, usually from a distance, whether or not they are trying to manipulate me to get at a victim, or whether or not they are the victim, and they're speaking out genuinely.
Yeah. Exactly.
How do I determine if they're lying or not? And there are ways that I determine that. And I can get duped up to a certain point, but the truth eventually always comes out. There are times where I'm just like, there are some scenarios where people have come to me and I'm like, I don't even know how to unravel this one. Like it's so complicated. I don't know that I have enough data that I can even figure out what's actually going on. But there are other scenarios where, it becomes really apparent to me what has happened. And, the scenario that I have going on in my own life, I've been writing on Facebook about it, is, so I'm in a polyamorous relationship now. I have my primary partner, is a man, and I live with him and his wife. He and his wife have been together for a long time. They've been in open relationships for a long time. They have kids. And I vetted my partner for abusive behavior, and, I didn't see anything from him. I didn't really do such a great job of vetting his wife. And it turns out that he is really emotionally abusive to him and to a certain extent to the kids, and that's actually not something I'm comfortable going into, in more depth than that at this moment for various reasons. But, so what happened was, and here's how I determined that she was the abusive party. At first, I was being manipulated into some of her game, for lack of better terms. So what happened was when she got me to move in by saying, look, he and I have had problems in the past, and, him with you is, we are in a better place than we have been in a really long time. And so, please move in, because, we are a healthier dynamic with you in it. So I said, okay. Yeah.
Sounds pretty good. Yeah.
Sounds great. Mm-hmm. What I later found out, she hasn't said this to me, but she said this to my partner, when she eventually admitted to the fact that she invited me to live here so that she could leave and take the kids.
Yeah. Works with a different color.
Well, and so, but here's, again, and here's part of what makes abusive situations so, for lack of better words, crazy-making, is that the abuser is, like, sometimes the abuser has a really specific strategic plan, and they are, they completely lack empathy, and they're on that sociopath, psychopath, antisocial personality disorder kind of area, you know, and they are very specifically planning your downfall. And sometimes it's just someone who has some kind of issues, a combination of the abusive behavior and, you know, possibly a personality disorder or unmedicated bipolar, any number of different, you know, combination of things where they are lying on autopilot because they are afraid. And, you know, like what I was talking about with the, you know, the first relationship that I talked about where he wasn't intending to harm me. It just, you know, he just didn't have skills. Well, so what I have going on now in this household that I'm in now is a slightly worse situation in the respect of there is some premeditation to her lying and manipulation, and a lot of it is done on autopilot without a plan. So that can really be difficult for a victim of abuse, because if it's random, if what's going on, if the lies you're being told, if the manipulation, if they don't seem to have a pattern or a plan, that can be really disorienting. And it was for me, because I couldn't really track it to a pattern or a plan. It just, you know, I was like, well, what's the point of this manipulation? Like, that doesn't make sense. So what happened was, after I moved in, she started, you know, when she and I would be home alone, she would tell me that, oh, you know, our basically she was referring to our partner, you know, he's really abusive, and he's really abusive to the kids, and he's not. I mean, I live here. I've observed this. He's not.
Right.
You know, she's talking about how horrible he is and how abusive. And so she was basically, like, trying to turn me against him. And so at first, you know, because I could, with the victim advocacy stuff that I do, I'm listening to this, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, my first instinct should be to believe the victim here. So, you know, I was listening to what she said, and I was like, okay, because I have this relationship with him, my urge is going to be to not want to believe it, so I'm just going to hold space for that. And, you know, the way she was talking about stuff, here's kind of what went through my mind. Like, I felt there was just a little something energetically off about what she was telling me.
Right.
And there were two reasons for that. One is, based on what I had seen between them as far as their interactions, and then based on, you know, he and I had been together for a while, and based on his and my interactions, I was like, seeing any of these abusive behaviors from him. So... Mm-hmm. So there was no data on that. There were a couple of other red flags from her. One is, she was really trying to turn me against him. Like her language and her approach to things, it was very geared toward, you know, anything good that I said about him, she had a counter for. I was like, that's a red flag.
Wow.
The other red flag, I'm trying to think of these, you know, really concretely, because I know that can help somebody, you know, trying to make this determination. And one of the other red flags was she would talk about him being abusive, but it was always very vague. I would try and ask specific questions about, like, what are specific things that he said or did, and she couldn't answer those questions.
That's a good way to narrow down the possibilities of whether or not this person is lying, whether they're telling the truth. I like that. Ask specific questions consistently.
Well, and so then, you know, we had a number of these conversations over the course of several months. And this was last year when I was touring. So I would be out of town for 2-3 weeks at a time. So this was all kind of going on in slow motion when I was in town. Her stories weren't consistent. Like, like I said, I have a pretty good memory, and her stories lacked some consistency. So I was picking up on that. And so that's one thing. So it's not like I could figure all of this out in one conversation. That's something I want to make clear, is like, sometimes you can't figure all this out in one conversation. Sometimes it's going to take a few passes, to do that. I'm trying to think of any of the other red flags, but it's, you know, it was a constellation of things, because I started noticing the other stuff, and I noticed how she talked about him to other people. And, you know, and again, you know, I'm always trying to look at it through two lenses, because on the one hand, if you are a victim of abuse and you are trying to speak out, you are going to be telling other people around you to try and seek out that support. But it was just the way that she did it and the way that she treated people. She's very manipulative. She very much, like, she flirts with people to gain a sense of power and control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it, because I, you know, I'm a very sex positive person, but there's like flirting. Okay, yeah, no problem. Flirting to manipulate somebody, I'm not okay with that. Flirting to, you know, control somebody, I'm not okay with that.
Yeah.
And she would do things where she was, you know, she was basically flirting to get what she wanted. And when I say flirting, it's often sexual, but not necessarily. There's a kind of, I don't know, it's a thing that really charismatic people, or people that you perceive as charismatic, they
yeah.
will be just very attentive and flirtatious. It's sometimes called love bombing.
Yeah, love bombing is the exact
yeah.
correct phrase for
yeah.
that.
Yeah, it's and it's cult leaders do it. Cult leaders are
yeah.
the love bombing is often a phrase used in reference to the cult leaders that do it. So, you know, there were a constellation of different things where her story of things didn't match up, and I would kind of, I hate to put it this way, I'm kind of eavesdrop on their conversations sometimes to see how they treated each other, and for a while, there were some specific things where I was like, yeah, okay, he jumps from 0 to 60 as far as he goes to cranky pretty quickly. That's not great. But in context
right.
of what I know now about how manipulative
wow.
she is and how much lies,
yeah.
It's, you know, him being cranky like that is him not being the perfect victim, basically,
yeah.
is what that boils down to. He's not abusive. He has depression. You
yeah.
know, it's not him being abusive. It's him not. She comes home from doing, you know, whatever social thing where she gets high. She literally gets high off of her interactions with other people.
That's
where
the way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've talked to a couple of people about that in the past couple of days, because my ex did that as well. Like, specifically what we talked about is that in a poly relationship, the lover of your lover is your metamour. That's the easy,
yeah.
easier to say term. And so, you know, my metamour in this case is, you know, I was talking to a few people about this particular scenario. She is that kind of person who goes really out of her way to help other people out, but she has a lot of friends around her who need help and who need tending and caretaking.
Right.
And that's another flag of abusers. Like, the,
yeah.
as far as the people abusers keep around them, they will cut off their partner from, or if it's a group leader, you know, group members, they will do their best to cut people off from their other support networks. So in this case, she has turned their mutual friend against him, as, you know, mm-hmm. as best she could. And she has, over the years, basically scared off most of his close friends, so that he has lost that support network as well. And she has also, she keeps people around her that are wounded or damaged or needy, or, you know, people that she can go in and she can say, oh, you know, you're so great. And she can lift them up just by being charismatic. And then she is the focus of their attention, and she literally gets high off of that.
Yeah.
And there is a very distinct and specific pattern that I observe with her, where she gets high off of that interaction with people, and then you know, it's an addictive pattern. It's a dopamine thing, and then she has a crash.
Yep, and she'll probably discard those people for a short time, and then reestablish a connection with them, or maybe she has a revolving circle of different people who meet that description.
Yeah, she has a revolving circle of folks, and it's a lot of them it's not people who are super close near, like, they're not, you know, 15 minutes away. Like, we live in a pretty rural area, so it's as far as in person getting together. But, you know, she has, you know, there's all sorts of different things, but, you know, to try and get back to the, how do you determine if the person who's telling you they're being abused, how, you know, how do you determine who's
yeah.
telling the truth? And so, I mean, I think if you tell somebody, you know, I can't choose between you, that really is a cop-out. in that.
It's a choice. Yeah, you're making them choose, and it's a choice to not honor what that person has told you. And I think it's good to, you know, consider all sides, like you mentioned before, but it's also, I think it's necessary to acknowledge that what this person has shared with you probably took a lot of courage, and to then just turn around and say, well, don't make me choose, is absolutely a cop-out. It is.
I think it is absolutely appropriate, because I had a Facebook thread about this, and there's a couple of things that are appropriate in a situation like that. One is, maybe you don't know who's telling the truth. Maybe you honestly don't know. Like, maybe you've seen shitty behavior from both of them.
Yeah.
Maybe you know just enough about abusive relationships to know that the abuser can be playing the victim, and maybe you know just enough to know that the victim may not have been the perfect victim, and you don't have enough data just yet to be able to determine that. And so,
right.
I think in those situations, it's absolutely appropriate to say, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff from both of you. I don't really know what is going on, but I do want to be here for you. So I'm not going to make a choice right now. I'm going to watch and observe and see if I can unravel this and understand it more. And I think that is absolutely appropriate. I have to do that. Like,
yeah.
People tell me about stuff, and I'm like, you know, I don't have enough data, but I am going to be keeping my eyes out.
Yeah.
And,
that's,
you know,
totally.
I think that's a really different response than I'm not going to choose between you.
It is.
Another thing that's an appropriate response, this is something also that was brought up in that particular Facebook thread, is how do I put it? Like, okay, so let's, you know, because I as a survivor of abuse myself, and quite frankly, as somebody who's living in an abusive household right in this moment, that's where I'm doing my podcast from, is from my bedroom in this household with this unresolved situation. I am someone who I deal with depression, I deal with general anxiety, and I deal with PTSD from the abusive relationships of my past. So,
yeah.
You know, I have all that going on. And if, let's say, somebody comes to me and they're in an abusive relationship and, they want my help and support. And, maybe because of what I have going on in my household, or even just by being a survivor of abuse in the past, I do not have the spoons or the bandwidth to take that. Like, it's just going to be too triggering for me. And it's not that I don't believe this person. Like, maybe I have ample evidence that, you know, yes, it's person A is the victim here. Person B is clearly the perpetrator. But, you know, I may just, it may be too triggering for me to engage in being a primary support person.
Yeah.
So it is absolutely appropriate to have boundaries in that instance. And to, you know, what I might say, and I mean, I'm fine with stuff unless I'm really maxed out. So what I might say is something like, you know, I'm really sorry you're going through this, and I may be able to help talk through some of this stuff on occasion, but I can't be a primary support person because, you know, I can already tell that this is, you know, this is triggering my PTSD, and I, you know, this is going to set me really far back in, something along those lines. What I might offer them is, like, if you are in the place where you really need, like, you know, physical help of, like, you know, you're getting out and you need that, or whatever it is within my power to actually offer, you know, please do contact me. But I, you know, the specific place, and this is something that I understand very well at the moment, because, you know, I'm not the primary victim of the abuse in this household. My partner is.
Yeah, that's true.
And it is really, really difficult watching him go through the abuse.
It is.
And watching him enable it. Because I'm not only watching him enable it, I'm watching myself enable it in my past.
Yeah, exactly.
And I get mad at him for enabling it, and I realize that I'm mad at him for enabling it because I'm mad at myself. for being an enabler in the past. So, you know, and what, you know, what I hear from a lot of abuse victims is it's hard, and that can become victim blaming.
Yeah,
you know, when you're getting mad at a victim for not standing up for themselves, that can become victim blaming. And, you know, so one of the problems with that full cycle of abuse is that the victim will very often keep going back to their abuser and back to their abuser and back to their abuser. They go back and forth. And, you know, even when they start to recognize they're in an abusive relationship or an abusive dynamic, there is a back and forth thing where they keep going back. And for the people around them, it gets very, very frustrating. And it's a part of the cycle. I mean, it's basically quitting an abusive relationship is like quitting heroin. You know, it's basically, you know, I've been reading a lot about trauma bonding, and, you know, you're getting the same kind of dopamine spikes that you are from doing drugs. So it you know, literally quitting an abusive relationship, you're literally dealing with some of the same chemical, hormonal, you know, stuff that you do with, you know, with drug withdrawal. So it makes sense that these folks go back. I went back, you know, I'm not going to say this is like, you shouldn't do this. You know, I did it. And what I think is really, really important is that if you are in a situation where you are a survivor of abuse and you have a friend who has acknowledged, you know, has identified that they're in an abusive relationship, but they're in that back and forth where they're going back and forth, that can trigger you. And it is appropriate to set some limits and boundaries about what support you're going to offer that person. So I think that's very different from saying, I'm not going to choose between you. I think saying, hey, I have PTSD, this is triggering me. So, you know, if you are doing the I'm leaving thing and you want the support, I'm there for you, but I can't do the back and forth.
I think it's appropriate to, like you said, set the boundary. And, you know, maybe I can't be on the phone for 4 hours with you every day hashing out, you know, the details that we've maybe already discussed, or maybe I can't, you know, listen to the more painful parts of your story because it does trigger me, but I can be there to help you in a substantive way, like you said.
Yeah. So, you know, but I think it's really important that a lot of times, you know, when we feel we're being asked to choose between person A and person B, I think there's also just a lot of discomfort around the whole thing and there's lots of different reasons for it. And so, you know, I think the simple answer that we go to is like, oh, I'm not going to choose between you. I think that we have to understand that there's a lot of complexity going on there and that it is fucking uncomfortable. And it's going to be uncomfortable. And, you know, I would say that there's, you know, if there's a couple of things that I could just wave my magic wand and make sure everybody had, I wish everybody out there in the world had a greater ability to hold discomfort.
Yeah, agreed. And if you are feeling discomfort as that third party and as the person that the abuse victim or survivor rather is coming to, imagine how they felt. It's not about you. It's about them, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not as uncomfortable as you might be making that choice. Sometimes the choices have to be made. And like you said, you take your time, you listen to both sides of the story. And if you need to, and you use your capabilities to be discerning and do your best, but you can't say, I'm just not going to choose, because assuming that there is abuse going on, that is just not an acceptable thing to say to somebody you purport to care about.
Right. And then, you know, going out into the whole, you know, looking at how this, you know, plays out when you're in a community, you know, there's other factors that, of course, make it messier. You know, why make it easy to deal with? Let's make it messy. You know, if you're, let's say you're dealing with, your abuser might be somebody who, you know, you're going to run into at the local public ritual. Well, that's uncomfortable, right? That's, you know, that's triggering and traumatizing. And so what do you do with that? Well, so what a lot of people will do is they'll go to the organizer. They'll say, you know, I was abused by this person and, you know, I can't be at a ritual if they're there. And I think a lot of organizers, their instinct is to say, well, you know, if you guys can't get along, that's on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are some scenarios where that's appropriate, like where there's like a petty conflict. Yeah, that's appropriate.
Of course.
If you're talking about an abusive scenario, that's not appropriate.
It's not. And it's not appropriate, too, what that person says, oh, okay, well, you, and I guess you're just not in the future. That's not appropriate as an organizer.
Yeah. Yeah, but then as an organizer, you are being asked to determine who is right. So, and you know it, and it becomes different. It's a really different scenario where, like, if you've got a closed coven of half a dozen, 10 people, and you know both parties, it's a lot. I think it's both more heartbreaking, but also easier to make a decision because. You know those people, you know, you probably have seen some of the dynamics. You can, you have that more intimate relationship with them where you can kind of figure out what was going on. And, you know, like, in that kind of scenario, it's a little bit easier to figure out, okay, this person is really being abusive. So, you know, as much as I like them, I'm going to ask them to go ahead and leave the group. And so there's that scenario. You know, that's certainly a scenario that can occur. The more difficult scenario is, you know, if I'm running a public ritual, I don't know whose partner is who. You know, I mean, like, I don't know all that stuff. And kicking people out is a little trickier. It's not that it can't be done, but it's a little bit more complicated in that instance. And so I might have somebody coming up to me that, you know, maybe I've seen them at a few rituals, but we never really talked at length, and they say, you know, I can't be, at the ritual if so-and-so is here. And I have no way in that moment of determining who did what, particularly if it's like 15 minutes before the ritual is supposed to start. Like, So I guess, you know, there's lots of context where, you know, in that moment, no, I'm not going to make a decision. Unless I know the other party and I know what they've done.
Right.
You know, and I have some pretty solid information on that. In that moment, no, I can't render that decision. And so, you know, I guess I'm trying to find little caveats for it. You know, it's not in that moment. It's not, I'm not choosing between you. It's, I don't have enough information right now to make this choice. And, you know, if you want to stay here and participate in the ritual, I can confirm that, you know, I will not let any interaction happen between you and anybody that this person is trying to invade your space.
Yeah.
You know, come and let me know and I will make sure that does not happen. And, you know, if they are trying to do that, absolutely, I will kick them out. But, you know, in this moment, I don't have enough information to make that decision. So that's fair, you know, but it's also something where, I would say, you know, I will be watching. Let's talk after the ritual, how I can be of help. A lot of it can be context. There are other scenarios that there is not always a good clean answer. And again, it's like I said, abuse is on a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that there was a community situation where there's a really complicated situation. I almost need to draw a diagram. Let me see if I can articulate it. So it was a local Midwestern pagan community, and there were a number of different specific traditions and groups. There was a kind of a unity council-ish type of organization that had a board of directors, and they would put on some events. And there was a couple that had moved into town and was really interested in getting involved, and they were really trying to make stuff happen, which is great. And here's where my information about the whole scenario gets a little fuzzy, because there were two women, one of whom was involved, well, at least one, maybe both, were involved in kind of the leadership of one of these groups. And one or both of them had been with another pagan community leader, and he had been cheating on his partner with her or them. Again, the details get a little fuzzy. And then they were cheating on there's this couple that moved to town. So then they were with the guy, half the couple. They were cheating on the guy's, you know, wife.
Oh my god.
And all of them seemed to be engaging in a certain amount of gaslighting of the woman in that couple, and, you know, making her think that she was the crazy one.
Oh, that's awesome.
However, then the woman, half of the couple, also was later, when I was working with them, she was engaging in some really erratic behavior that was harmful. She started telling lies about me, which I couldn't tell if she, well, no, I think she just, she was here. She had her narrative of how things were going, and she was hearing things a certain way. And nothing I could tell her would dissuade her from her narrative of how things were going.
Yeah. Okay.
And so then, so one of the women who had done the cheating with the partner, so she was trying to get the guy banned from any of the community events. And I honestly, to this day, I don't know what is appropriate in that situation, because, you know, I would have needed to see a little bit more of it firsthand to be able to, because, you know, on the one hand, he was cheating and to a certain extent emotionally abusive, but this other person had a history of cheating, and it sounds like they were specifically doing some stuff to mess with the, you know, like I said, I almost need a diagram for this. And
right. They're both, it sounds like.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's why I bring it up.
Yeah.
So sometimes you do have these things come up in a community where maybe it's not appropriate off the cuff to ban somebody, but certainly keep an eye on them. One of the things that I would like to see more of in the pagan community is, people tell me all sorts of terrible things about people they know in the pagan community. So I'm holding all this information that I can't really name names about.
Very true.
Because those victims are not prepared to come forward, victims and survivors. And I use both terms, victim and survivor, because I think survivor is kind of a, you have to get to that place, and in the moment, you know, you can be both a victim and a survivor in the same moment. So that becomes complicated.
Well, I was going to ask you, what do you think about, well, we have here, but what do you think about this piece of advice? We've talked about is actually victim in this community, not the only stretch person, and, you know, victimized. I was one of many. What I did, only because I feel physically unsafe, this individual, I knew that they would be like a school, and the person would be hosted. It was a public, you know, school that like anybody could come to. After thinking about it quite a bit, that I was going to show up, so that people knew I was, so that everybody saw me act a reasonable individual public, which, you know, happened to be, and came in reasonable, was calm, respectful, and in that way, this lost it, absolutely lost it. I feel like she realized that she hadn't, not that it's a competition, it's not, but she hadn't won, she wasn't going to get positive attention. And like I said, just acting like a reasonable individual and being friendly to people and showing her way to show up, she absolutely fell down in front of everyone. That people, you know, don't withdraw and that they do show up and kind of represent themselves if they've been, they don't feel unsafely.
You're kind of breaking up a little bit, so I think I caught the gist of what you're asking. The short answer is yes and no. I think it really depends on the individual and where you're at.
Sure.
I do stuff like that very specifically,
yeah.
Like with my abusive ex, you know, he was very actively trying to push me out of the Chicago pagan community. And I was a local community leader. I was a teacher. I had a Beltane ritual planned. I had, I was growing my reputation as a national presenter. So in my specific case, I had enough of a social, I had enough social capital, I guess is the best way to put it. And
right.
I also had, a lot of motivation to not back down. And I felt very clear about where I was at. I knew that I had been treated unfairly. I knew that I had been manipulated and that other people had been manipulated. And so I chose very specifically to continue running events in Chicago without him. Even though I was living, I had to, the first breakup, I had to move up to Milwaukee to live with my mom. So I would drive back down to Chicago to run the events that I had already planned.
That's
so that
awesome.
I was not reneging. I hitched up my britches and I got it done. That was another Valentine's Day. And he kicked me out of our apartment on Valentine's Day weekend. And the next weekend was Convocation in Detroit, and he and I were both presenters there. That was the first time I was accepted as a presenter at Convocation, and he was going to be there, and I was not going to not present. So I just hitched my pants up, and I went and I did it, and I, had to pass him in the halls several times, and no fisticuffs were exchanged. I tried
well,
to be as professional as I
could.
Well, I keep joking. I want to make a shirt that says I'm a goddamn professional.
But that's a good point you're making. Okay, we've got about left. I just want to thank you so much for joining us and for talking about this. I appreciate you doing that. And thank you so much for your time and sharing some of your wisdom and your knowledge with us. And, if there's anything like promote any events or comment in the comment section here, I wanted to thank you for joining.
Thank
really
you very
appreciate
much. And,
it.
You know, thanks very much. And if anybody is looking to contact me, I've got books on some of these topics and, you can find me on Facebook. I have a website, ShaunaOrKnight.com. That's, you can find me and there are resources out there for you. So.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you joining me. Have a wonderful night.
Thanks, you too.